Session number 16843, Reel 1.
Commander Crisp, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Place called Shield Row, Stanley, County Durham.
Which year was this?
1908.
How and when did you come to be in the Navy?
Well, I joined at the age of 16. 1924. As a boy seaman.
You weren't in the Invergordon Mutiny, were you?
Oh, no, no, that was... No, too young for that. No, no, I was out in the Mediterranean during the Invergordon Mutiny, in a destroyer flotilla.
Did you see any active service before the war?
Well, not really. We... No, no. None at all.
What was your job and what was your rank when the war broke out?
I was a warrant officer bosun.
In a ship?
In a ship.
Yes.
I was appointed in command of an admiralty-built trawler, arm trawler, called HMS Jasper. She was one of three trawlers in Rosyth, brought out of reserve. There was the Jasper, the Agate, and the Amethyst. And they were all commanded by bosuns, except we did have a group leader, lieutenant commander, in HMS Amethyst. Not the Amethyst of the Yangtze.
Were these hull trawlers?
Hull?
Hull trawlers?
No, no. They were admirably built armed trawlers. We had a 4-inch gun forward, and we had 40 depth charges in wrecks on the stern.
What was their job supposed to be?
Oh, well, we had many jobs, really. And first of all, I must say we were commissioned by RN, I think it was Class D, reservemen. And they were there for 6 months. And we were training skippers in anti-submarine warfare. And this was before the war, of course, in April 39. And we only had 25 crew, and out of that there was myself, Chief ERA and Stoker, and an ASDIC rating, who were the only regular service. And our job, of course, was to train skippers in anti-submarine warfare, and we took one skipper per month, and we exercised the trawlers at the entrance to the Firth of Forth, with a small submarine. I think we had an L-class submarine. Until war broke out.
So you were based on the Clyde?
Firth of Forth, Rosyth.
And you were the skipper of this?
I was commanding officer of the trawler.
How did you find the skippers to train?
How did we find them? Yes. Well, they were sent to us, of course, by Admiralty.
No, I mean...
You mean, how did we get on with them?
Yes.
Very well indeed. They were very valuable men because they were trawler men. And when you have a small ship of about 600 tons with a gun forward and these depth charges aft, they were very difficult to handle. We only had one screw, you see. And we had no radar. And we had no gyro compass. So we're basically down to magnetic steering. And, of course, ship handling was different to when you were in destroyers with two propellers. We only had the one propeller. And they were coal ships. So they were... Well, I found that I was a destroyer man, so I didn't mind them. But they're a bit hectic when they got into the rough seas, of course.
What had your reaction been when you heard the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, we were on our war stations 1 week before war started. So we knew what was happening, really. We had an idea, anyhow, what was going to happen. And ships were rushing in and out of up and down the Forth, getting ready for this, that and everything else. There was no reaction at all. The only reaction was, of course, that the crew I had for 6 months, they were due to be relieved a fortnight after war broke out, well, I had to hold them. And I also had to hold the skipper I was training, because I couldn't certainly carry on being 24 hours a day on watch in wartime. So he was my first lieutenant.
Did you see any active service in those first months of the war?
Oh, yes. Yes. We were doing what they call loop patrol. And that was the trawlers were guarding the Firth of Forth between May Island and Bass Rock. And then, of course, we got all sorts of odd jobs. We went out to escort lighthouse keepers to Bell Rock. We then, when the Iron Duke was attacked, of course, in Scapa Flow, we were then brought back to carry out Aztec sweeps all along the coast. That would be on the west coast. And it was there that the Belfast, she was mined. So we were brought up to sweep either way, this days on end, of course, for mines. And then there was another ship went up called, I think, the Royal Archer. And we were called out. In fact, we just got in, we were called out straight away. And we were sweeping round. And it was misty, and we saw a lot of objects. We thought they were mines. And actually, they were beer barrels. So that was a light, whatnot. Then we had the usual scares, of course. Now and again, the crew would report this and that. And one occasion, they swore it was a periscope, and we went, got our eyes on it, of course, and went for it. And it was just an ordinary boat hook, bobbing up and down, you know. Then the other, we watched the plover, the mine layer. She was dropping her mines between Bass Rock and the mainland. And then we are coming up to take a position at the entrance when a convoy came in. And we were lucky, really. We were about a quarter of a mile off the convoy. It was coming in, we were going out. And two German bombers came down, bombed the convoy. We were out of it, you see. And strafed the destroyers. Unfortunately, the Mohawk's captain, Captain Jolly, I think Commander Jolly, he was killed. And other than that, was my first experience of bombs. And we had to report, of course, if anything had happened. Nothing had happened to us. And two fighters came over and shot down these... Three fighters came over, rather, and shot down these German bombers. That was my first sort of entrance into bombing, the first time ever.
This was in 39, was it?
This, pardon?
In 39, 1939.
39, yes.
Before Christmas.
That's right, before Christmas. And destroyers came and went, of course. And we just had the usual... One chap run aground off between May Island and the Aberdeen side of the coast, of course. And we were sent to see if we can give him assistance. Small coast, though. So I closed quite near enough without getting aground. He wouldn't take a line. He didn't want to pay, you see. So he said he was quite all right. So anyhow, we hung about and waited for high tide, and he got himself off. These are the sort of jobs that used to happen, really. And the other occasion, we used to get some very, very bad northerly gales, you know, towards the end of the year. And what happened was, of course, the mines, two or three mines, broke away from their moorings between Bass Rock and the mainland. And we were given orders, of course, to sink them and report them. Well, it's not very nice. You don't know how far you're going to be off on that. You're not quite with it at the beginning, how far you should be off. But anyhow, I laid off about 100 yards. We sighted one, and I got the crew up with their rifles and ourselves, and we managed to sink it and report it. Now, why we did that, I think, was because at the time, I think a month before that, Chief Petty Officer Baldwin, I believe he'd... he he'd examined a German mine somewhere on the south coast.
Remember Shoebury Ness?
Something like that, yes.
In Essex?
That's the one. I think it was.
An acoustic mine.
That's right. He was the first to do this. Well, he came up, of course, the Rosyth. Then we were then in Granton, of course, operating from Granton. And there were mines, he was one side of the harbour, and Aztec trawlers the other. And he went out in a minesweeper to attend to a mine, and it blew up. Blew him up, the crew up, you know, and that was the end. And I suppose that was why we were told that if we saw a mine, not to fiddle about with it, just sink it and report where it was sunk. I remember we sank ours somewhere off Fidra Light. And from that day onwards, of course, before we used to go to Granton, before we went back to sea again on patrol, we had to give a list, a nominal list, to be taken ashore, because they never knew, I think, how many people were lost in that trawler. And this happened every time we went out, of course, we provided a list. And then when we came back, of course, that was it. Very sad. Very sad. Then, all sorts of things were happening. Destroyers coming in. This, that, and everything else. And then, of course, there came a time when they said, all right, we need you for slow convoys. And so the three trawlers started convoy duties from Methil to the Tyne, the slow convoys. And it was usual thing to go out at night, of course, etc., etc. And other than night bombing on one occasion, and it was miles away. Everything went quite all right. In fact, the only incident we had was very, very rough weather. And the convoy was stretched out in single line with a destroyer ahead, you see. Trawler either side, and we were the junior ship right astern. And I remember saying to the skipper, all right, I'll have a little nap now. We used to do 4 hours watches and then decided on 6 hours to get some sleep. And I said, don't forget, we'll turn down when we get in line with the Longson, and then, of course, alter course down to the Tyne. Anyhow, when I came on deck four hours later, I just happened to look around, and I looked at the chart, and I found that we'd actually gone, I think, about 2 hours towards the minefield. It was a minefield, you know, on the East Coast, right in the minefield. I said, good Lord. I said, why haven't we altered course? He said, well, sir, he said, I'm following the next ahead, which is quite as he should have done. I said, all right. I said, something's wrong. Let's creep up the convoy. It was 8 knots, so we could only go 10. So off we went long up by the convoy. We passed the first. I said, it was bad weather. Then we passed the second. Then we passed the third. Then we got to the fourth, and there was nothing in sight. Not a thing in sight. The convoy had altered course, and in the mist, the merchantmen hadn't seen them. So, good Lord. So the only thing to do, of course, was to immediately get in front of the chap ahead, then alter course towards the Tyne, or alter course near enough to the Tyne, hoping to pick up the tail end of the convoy before it went in. And we were lucky, because when we'd alter course, the minesweepers were coming up. In other words, we had gone through, we're going past an unswept lane. We picked up the convoy, believe it or not, as the last one was turning into the Tyne. And that's one of those accidents. And I think probably a lot of things like that happened. And the other thing we worried about now and again was when the other convoys used to come down, and we used to always meet, oddly enough, in about 2 o'clock in the morning. Can you imagine it? And it was always sort of this sort of thing.
What sort of thing?
Dodging each other. Because the convoy was coming south and we were going up north. And other than that, nothing really to worry about. And the crew were quite happy. They were all destroyer men. Didn't matter what the weather was like, you know. They're quite a lot of tough lads. The whole lot of them, really. They did an extremely good job. And this went on, of course, until we were then I think called upon to do, we are called the fighting group. So we then changed from convoy duties to hunting submarines. And by that time we'd got a lieutenant, RNVR, on board, and he was under tuition because he would have to take my place when I left later, you see. And I left, then we left, the skipper left, which is a pity, so that left two of us. Then a subby joined, and RNVR again, and of course they had no experience, so they were gradually brought along, and off we went searching for submarines on the way, all the way down to, where was it, Dover. We popped in there for the night, then we carried on our way down to Devon, and on the way down we got off Start Point, and we got the first, what we thought was the first anyhow, first contact. And of course the group officer sent us in, as we have been taught, to drop depth charges, and of course what it was a wreck. Bits and pieces came up, etc. But we're quite pleased because we'd hit the target. And then the three of us then went down to Mill Bay Docks. And actually, we just got in when Jasper, that was my ship, we were ordered out straight away from Mill Bay Docks to escort a chap over to Le Havre. So out we went, we met this chap off the Edison, of course, pitch black, you know, and all that sort of thing. And we gave him the tic-tac over the Aldous, you know, off you go, and off he went. Well, we could only do 10 knots. And this merchant went off. And he must have gone off at about 15. He didn't wait. We couldn't do anything about it. Anyhow, we carried on, until we, in the morning, late morning, it was a late afternoon, we saw him actually in Le Havre. And there we were. We were supposed to be the escort. So back we came. Back to Mill Bay Docks, and we hadn't been in there long when we were ordered out, the whole lot of us, the group, to Falmouth, where we carried out sort of harbour defences. We had two contacts, but depth charges were dropped, but nothing happened. There was nothing there, I suppose. And then I was ordered to go over to Brest and pick up a burnt-out merchantman being towed back to England, which we did. We brought her in. Nothing happened. And then after that, the group was ordered to scout round the Scilly Islands, because it had been reported the Italian submarines, and Italian weren't in the war then, had been seen operating off the Scilly Islands. Off we went, scattered round there, for quite a long time. Then came back to, we were ordered back to Devonport. Then we went into Mill Bay Docks. And in the meantime, the lieutenant, who was to take my job later, he had severe pains. He'd had them for about a month. So he went off to see the doctor, and then he came back to say that he'd been ordered into hospital. He had a fistula, and he had to be operated on. And so that left myself and Subby in the ship. And that very night, we then got orders to proceed to sea with sealed orders. So when we got out, of course, we opened up, and we found out that we had to take up a position off Dunkirk. At that time, the evacuation was taking part. And the three trawlers, one of our trawlers had to go onto the starboard side of the fairway, where miles wide, of course, one in the centre, and we were on the northern side. And our job was, of course, was to keep the way clear right up to Dunkirk and make sure that no submarines and small craft got through. And the weather was ideal, perfect for any evacuation. We've got a shock of our lives where it's all these small craft. Got all sorts of small craft coming up. Then, of course, there were destroyers, there was merchantmen, There were an Isle of Wight ferry, I think, a couple of ferries. Anything that would take soldiers or during evacuation was there. I don't know how many altogether. And on the second day, I had a very good conduct. So hoisted flags, etc. And went in to attack this. And down went the depth charge. Up came some wreckage and some dead bodies. They were merchantmen. I don't know how long they'd been there. Anyhow, we couldn't do much about it. I had to report it, of course. And then the leading seaman came up to me. He said, "I'm sorry, sir." He said, "But the four-inch gun won't train. The training gear had jammed on the four-inch gun. So there's only one thing to do. We have to push the gun round to the four-knob position. And if we came to a sub, that was the position we would have to fire in." And then when that was got over to the crew, this chap came up. The ASIC operator said he'd lost contact. Everything was off. Oh, good Lord. So there we are with a gun that wouldn't train. And we had an ASIC set that wouldn't work. But anyhow, I sent down the subby. And he came back about half an hour later. And it was all right. We're pinging well. I said, "Well done. What happened?" He said, "You believe it or not, sir." He said, "But I repaired it with a shoelace." What had happened, one of the leads had come loose, you see. And he'd taken the shoelace off and, of course, doctored it up, tied it up, and the ASIC set was working again. That's one of the comedies of war, I think. Well, as you know, we're there for, I think it was 5 or 7 days. we were bombed once, but it was quite a way. And I don't know what happened. I thought, in fact, they'd hit our leader. But didn't see anything. And I think it was on the fourth day that it was rather murky weather, misty. A little drifter came alongside with a lot of soldiers, pecked up the funnel. He came alongside. A Scott chap, he said, "Can you tell me the way to Dover?" He said, "I'm afraid I've lost my way." So we gave him a course for Dover. And the soldiers went off cheering and, you know, saying, "We'll have a pint with you when we get in," and all this sort of thing. And then we just carried on. Destroyers came, destroyers went. Some were damaged. In fact, I think altogether, I think we lost about 6 destroyers. In fact, I think we lost altogether about 12 trawlers, 6 destroyers, 2 or 3 Frenchmen, and a tug. Because the tug was commanded by an officer friend of mine, but he was saved. And of course we just carried on as we had to do, up and down, day on and day night, until we got orders that the evacuation was finished. Nothing happening then. But just before the end, we heard a cry from someone of a small ship saying, you know, he was in trouble. Would someone go along and help him? So we went back about 4 or 5 miles to where we thought he was. There was nothing there, but there was wreckage. There's always bits and pieces hanging about. And so off we went, had orders to anchor in the roads off Dover, which we did. We all went to sleep. You see, there'd be no relief for anyone, really. And we all wore light belts, of course, we always did. And we're sleeping on the bridge, pretty small bridge. And they had orders then to proceed to Parkson Quay. When we got up, well, the chap shook me at 8 o'clock, looked round, and the group had gone. It fiddled off. So anyhow, we went off up on our own and entered harbour and went alongside Parkson Quay.
So you didn't actually evacuate any soldiers?
No, no, we were there, you know. We were there with the depth charges. And no, we didn't. We didn't, no. We were the guards, you know, making sure that no one was attacked. That was our job, to make sure that no those German E-boats, or whatever they used to call them, or submarines. In other words, that the evacuation was complete when we were there. Everything was safe and sound, as far as we knew. The only thing, we couldn't manage the planes. You know, they were coming over, of course, and dropping their bits and pieces, which we didn't like. And when I got to Parkes and Key, we were given orders. We were given 2 days' leave, believe it or not. So off we went, the crew, so and so. And when I came back, I found that I'd been appointed to Chatham, had to return to Chatham. And the lieutenant then took over, you see. He was back from hospital. And then when I got to Chatham, I was detailed off to take armed guard, into the dockyard and march out or take off the crews of two Frenchmen. One was a trawler called the Bernadette, and the other was another vessel called the Paris. She seemed to be a tender for something. Anyhow, we got these chaps off and we put them in a ship on the other side of the jetty called the Pekin. She was an old sailing ship.
So, what was the attitude of these Frenchmen?
Oh, well, a lot of them were drunk. They'd been able to get down to the, you know. But other than that, no, we had no trouble with them. I had 12 armed sailors, you know, a proper armed guard. And we just got them off quietly, really. I think they're quite pleased to come off eventually. And to put them in the Pekin, where they were looked after properly, of course. And I only had to sleep 2 nights in the Paris. Then I was back in the barracks. And I'd been in barracks about a fortnight when I then was appointed to go to Scotland, to HMS Rook, a boom defence depot. And when I got there, I was then, with another chap, ordered to go to Scarborough to join HMS Illustrious for passage, of course, to the Mediterranean. And there was, I think, two or three cruisers with the Illustrious. We sailed out, of course, Gibraltar, back in, and then into the Mediterranean at night, always. And off we went. And I think we got to two or three days out when the Illustrious flew off her string bags, as we used to call them, the torpedo planes, and the full, not the full Mars, they were the fighters.
The Swordfish.
That's right, the Swordfish. And they bombed Cagliari in Sardinia. I think they had a few hits there on the Italian fleet, or units of the fleet. Then, of course, all returned safely. And the next morning, the fighters went up, but before they got up, the bombers came along and missed us by half a mile. So we were lucky. We got away from that bombing incident. Then went, I believe,